Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conti of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're spending this hour focused on computer attacks, crimes, and the future of warfare. Our next guest, Peter Singer, has long been in front of this issue, warning that future conflicts are going to be waged by hackers at computer screens, as well as soldiers with guns. Singer serves as senior fellow at the New America Foundation, a Washington think tank. He has written a couple of nonfiction books about computers and warfare, and this summer he came out with his first fiction novel, Ghost Fleet, about, you guessed it, a future cyber war. Peter Singer joins us by phone from Washington. He recently visited Pittsburgh as a guest of the World Affairs Council. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
Peter, it is so hard to separate fact from fiction when it comes to predictions about cyber warfare. And yet you've straddled the line. You've written nonfiction books, and now you've got a novel out. In your mind, where does the science end and the fantasy begin?
So our rule in building Ghost Fleet was no alien space power packs, no teenage wizard hormones or vampires. Every single technology in it, every single trend, even some of the things that the characters say are all drawn from the real world. That is, if the novel comes with 400 endnotes to document in a nonfiction book style how it's all real. So it's imagine it like a Tom Clancy techno thriller, but crossed with real-world research. And the other way to ensure that the fact side and operating in a realistic manner is we went out and met with the real people who would be the characters, so to speak, if there was a war with a China, with a Russia, if there was an actual World War III. And so the characters, you know, range from the expected U.S. Navy fighter pilots, ship captains, to Chinese generals, but the ones that we don't expect, but maybe we should. So things like technology, entrepreneurs, venture capitalists, anonymous hackers. And so, you know, when you're meeting with them, you're not just drawing from their insights, but it also allows you to, again, ground it in the real world.
Yeah, it's much more frightening that way. When you ground it in reality, this is all stuff that could happen. Without giving too much away of your nightmares, obviously, this is stuff that keeps you up at night. But, you know, what is the worst case scenario in your mind for an actual cyber warfare attack?
I think the key is to not just think of it as only cyber warfare. Cyber war is this term that's abused as maybe the word war itself. You know, we call things war that really aren't, the war on drugs. And then there's things that are war that we don't actually call war, you know, so airstrike campaigns. When we're talking about cybersecurity, there's lots of things that we've described as cyber war, someone stealing the James Bond script from a Hollywood studio and publishing it to the world, that really aren't. I think the worst case scenario is not what would a cyber war look like, but an actual war. That is, war, whether it's cyber warfare, air warfare, whatever it is, it's the cross between politics and violence. So we would see an actual use of cyber weapons to cause kinetic damage in the real world.
Right, so that if you had an actual conflict, that cyber would be part of it then.
Exactly. And so if, you know, if we're, people like to use the phrase cyber Pearl Harbor, but how would it blend into a more traditional Pearl Harbor attack? Maybe a different way of talking about it is the difference between the fear of a big power war, a war between the states, as opposed to the sorts of things we've been fighting for the last couple of decades where, you know, they've been troubling, they've been difficult. But, you know, the ISISs of the world, the Talibans of the world, they don't bring to bear the same kind of powers as a nation like a Russia or a China, but also the locations in which they can fight. You would see battles simultaneously, not just on the land, but in the air, at sea. You know, we haven't seen those against a peer power for 70 years, but you'd also see battles in cyberspace, all playing out simultaneously.
Right, and in some ways, that's almost reassuring. I mean, it sounds kind of perverse, but we talk all the time about how the public is not prepared for a cyber attack. But in your scenario, you're talking about this would perhaps be something that only occurs, you know, along with an actual kinetic attack, right?
Yes and no. I think the way to describe it is we make it seem like cyber attacks are incredibly easy to pull off. And some of them are, and frankly, some of them are not. The more complicated, the more impactful ones are not. It's not something that a couple of kids in their basement could pull off. But the way I think about it is you have certain groups and actors that are undeterrable. The, you know, terrorist groups of the world, you say to them, well, if you do X, I'm going to do Y. If you do X, you know, you might die. Well, someone who is a suicide bomber doesn't care about that. At the other end of the spectrum, you have entities that are deterrable. They've got a stake in the game. nation states operate that way. The good news is that the ones that are less deterrable don't have the same power to bring to bear. The bad news is that they still have some capabilities. It's becoming easier for them to pull things off. And, oh, by the way, geopolitics is changing, and once unthinkable risk of a war with a nation like a Russia or a China, it's certainly not something we would want to happen. It's not something that's inevitable, but it's a risk. It's the kind of thing that could start by accident, two ships scraping paint over some reef in disputed territory. We've had Russian bomber planes visiting our borders, an accident, two planes bumping in the air. Or again, it may be something that plays out in the 2020s. And so in our book, it's a novel. We explore, just what would a war look like in the 2020s and how it blend all these different elements.
You're listening to Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Andy Conte of the Tribune Review, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Peter Singer, senior fellow at the New America Foundation and author of the debut novel Ghost Fleet. You were advisor to Hollywood movies, the Call of Duty video game, and the fact that you were an advisor to HBO. How did you end up coming up with the idea to do a fiction novel? Was it just looking at these guys and saying, I could do this better?
No, but it definitely created an urge to play in that realm and advising and learning from some of the craft. And then I had a nugget of an idea, but the nugget of the idea, frankly, paralleled the experience that I'd had as a kid growing up. I mean, maybe the best way to put this is George R. R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones, once said, in effect, that all writers are readers first, and so they want to write the kind of books they like to read. And for me, it was science fiction, techno-thriller genre.
I thought it was fascinating reading the book because you obviously did as much research writing about fiction as you would have for a nonfiction book almost. I mean, everything in there seems so technical and fact-based that it must have been interesting for you to go from your nonfiction background to writing a novel like this. Was it liberating in some ways?
It's one, thank you. Two, it's both liberating but incredibly challenging. So when you're a nonfiction writer, when you're a reporter, dialogue's easy. You get the quote right. With fiction, you're creating the quote. You're getting the, how does that person talk, the tone, that's very difficult. The same thing in terms of the editing process. With nonfiction, whether it's a newspaper article or a book, things, it's okay, here's the argument, here's the number of words I have in it. Oh, gosh, I need to trim it down. With fiction, it's your creation. So if you're cutting a scene or you're even more so cutting a character, it can be painful. And of course, different people with fiction have different viewpoints. So, you may love a certain character and I may not, or you may like a certain style. Some people like cliffhangers, other people don't. And so, there's certain subjectivities to it, but it definitely was a lot of fun to build. But I think what's been exciting for us is the book seems to have struck a chord not just with readers who, like us, want to relive those early Tom Clancy-style books. And so we've developed, I think, a little bit of a fan base among that readership, but also among people who are essentially in these roles. So we've been invited to brief the real-world lessons of the book to groups that range from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of the military, senators, you mentioned the Army War College up in Pennsylvania. We was able to speak to them. So it's funny, it's a novel, but it's having a real-world impact. And that may in part be because of the very fact that it is a novel, that people are not just, someone walking through an airport who wants a fun read, but we found this with four-star generals are more likely to read it and learn from it because it's a novel. It's made it easier for their staff to say, hey, sir, this is worth your time. Or we've had one admiral tell another admiral, hey, you'll enjoy this, but you'll also find it useful in your planning. And that I think goes back to this concept that we've been talking about of useful fiction, is that you can play in both worlds. And we hope we've proven that with the project.
That's absolutely fascinating, the power of fiction. Peter Singer, thank you for joining us.
No, thank you.
We've been talking with Peter Singer, a leading expert on cyber warfare at the New America Foundation and author of the debut novel Ghost Fleet. Peter was recently a guest of the World Affairs Council of Pittsburgh. Later this month, Adam Myers, Vice President of Intelligence at CrowdStrike, will be their guest for a talk on cybercrime. Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.fm or as a podcast in iTunes. I'm Andy Conti, investigative reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune-Review, in for Paul Guggenheimer.